and deponent further says that he lived at Lee, Berkshire County, Massachusetts, from 1838 until 1863, that from 1842 until 1857 he was superintendent of the Methodist Episcopal Sunday School of that town, that about 1846, Eliza Potter, since married to a man by the name of Wilson B. White, became a pupil in that Sunday school, that she was at that time apparently about 6 years old, and that he has every reason to believe she cannot be under 35 years, that she attended the school at irregular intervals for 6 or 7 years, and continued to live in the town several years after she left the school, that during that time she was a very wayward girl, and caused her father a great deal of trouble, that she was so untruthful that those to whom she spoke never knew when to believe her, and that her moral reputation in other respects was as bad as it could be. Deponent further says that in June last, he visited Mr. and Mrs. Holmes at No. 50 North 9th Street, Philadelphia, that on entering the sitting room on that occasion, he saw and recognized Eliza White, formerly Eliza Potter, who at once recognized him and called him by name, that he remained at the house 2 days, during which time he saw and conversed with her frequently, and cannot be mistaken as to her identity. That on the same afternoon, Dr. Henry T. Child, assisted by a mechanic and himself, put up the black walnut cabinet which was afterwards used at the subsequent seances, that they only completed the work a short time before the circle was to meet on that evening, that he remembers distinctly that Dr. Child called his attention to the fact that the battens are being fastened with 40 screws, that as the cabinet was then constructed in his presence, it was impossible for anyone to have entered it or left it by way of the adjoining room, or in any other manner, without being seen by all present. That just before the circle commenced that evening, he, deponent, left his room in the third story, and in passing the door of the front room, which is directly over the circle room, he saw Mrs. White sitting in that room, that frequently while the circle continued, he heard Mrs. White distinctly humming tunes, the front windows of both rooms being open, and he also heard her walking about the room. That 5 or 6 different faces appeared at the apertures of the cabinet, also, several hands and arms were thrust out of the same apertures during the seance, among which Katie King appeared several times. That the latter spoke in an audible whisper from the cabinet several times, that while she was so talking, the singing of Mrs. White in the room above became so annoying as to cause remark by those in the circle, and interfered with the hearing of the voice from the cabinet, and that he cannot be mistaken about the voice humming or singing being that of Mrs. White. Deponent further says that it was impossible for Mrs. White on that occasion to have personated Katie King, and he further says that he asked Mrs. White during his stay at the house, whether she had attended the seances at that place, to which she replied, she had attended them but once, and that she thought them wonderful. In testimony whereof, I hereunto set my hand and affix the seal this 22d day of January, in the year of our Lord 1875. Hosea Allen, Esquire, sworn and subscribed this 22d day of January, A.D. 1875. Francis Hood, seal, Alderman. This witness, if unimpeached, convicts Eliza of more perjuries than one, for he not only challenges her age, but also shows that, upon at least one occasion, it must have been physically impossible for her to have been downstairs personating Katie King, when, upstairs, in the chamber overhead, she was making such a racket as to disturb the seance while Katie was out of the cabinet, among the spectators. I give this affidavit for what it is worth, and those who know Judge Allen better than I can decide what credence to accord to his statements. I should add that Dr. Child's friends deny emphatically that he assisted in putting up the cabinet, and, on the other hand, will say that Judge Allen's story of Mrs. White's being upstairs upon the evening in question has been corroborated to me by the statements of others who were present. If the reader will now refer back to Eliza's statement that she began her personations of Katie King in a trick walnut cabinet in the 9th Street house, I will venture a few remarks upon that head. In her autobiography of Katie King, she describes the cabinet as being made of dark, or walnut boards across one corner of the room, and illustrates the same biodiagram, which it is not worthwhile to copy here. Now, it happens that in his article in the December Galaxy, General Lippitt, a gentleman of the most unimpeachable honor, describes the cabinet from which he saw Katie emerge, as quite a different affair. He says the cabinet or sanctum in which spirits were said to clothe themselves in mortal forms, consisted of the following simple arrangement: the bedroom door was left open at an angle of 60 deg, on the opposite doorpost a second door was attached, which came out to meet it at the same angle, and when the two doors thus met, the recess formed was obviously an equilateral triangle, just large enough to comfortably contain the medium, Mr. Holmes, seated in a chair. Whenever this little sanctum was to be used, the light was excluded from above by a triangular piece of wood laid across the tops of the two doors. This cover was lined on the inside with black cloth, as were also the insides of the two doors. The air being thus shut out from the little closet, the necessity of the air holes through the wood partition was apparent. Through the one of these two doors which faced the spectators, at the height of some 5 feet from the floor, was a circular aperture or window, about 10 inches in diameter, at which the faces were to be seen. A black curtain hung on the inside of it, which was drawn aside just before a face presented itself. The most searching examination of this sanctum, which was usually made by invitation just before the sitting commenced, both on the parlor and on the bedroom side of the board partition, failed to detect the slightest indication of any trap, wire, or other arrangement for the use of machinery or for deception. The first two or three evenings I attended, I made a careful examination myself, and on one occasion jointly with a professional magician, a pupil of Blitz, who told me he was perfectly satisfied that there was no chance for any trick there. General Lippitt, in a recent communication to the Banner of Light, says that the cabinet Eliza describes was not erected until the 5th of June, whereas his attendance at the seances occurred in the early and middle part of May. It scarcely needs an enumeration of the wonderful phenomena witnessed by that gentleman, such as the melting out of Katie's eyes, when she had been too long exposed to the light, the simultaneous appearance of numerous little and big hands at the aperture, and the identification of sundry spirits by their relatives to satisfy us that Eliza's pretended revelations have no bearing upon his experiences. I pass over, for the present, the remaining points made in the so-called autobiography, because the best answer to them is to be found in the report of what occurred during my investigation of the Holmes mediumship. I cannot too earnestly press upon my readers the attitude I am determined to maintain towards this whole spiritualistic question. What I am in search of is proof positive that the partial or complete materialization of spirit forms has occurred, and can occur again under laws now occult. I have not, nor will I play the part of the mutured, searching out the immorality of mediums or the trickeries they resort to, except in so far as it may be necessary, in the one case, to weigh their testimony, and, in the other, to learn how their roguery may be made impossible of repetition. It is nothing to the cause of science that 99 times mediums have tricked, but it is of prime importance to it to know that in one solitary case there has been an exhibition of genuine materialization. The one grain of wheat outvalues the whole bin full of chaff, for that grain may, someday, lead to an abundant harvest, over the whole earth. It will be found, therefore, that in this particular instance, as in that of the Chittenden manifestations, I will spend very little time in trying to discover whether the mediums cheated often or seldom, whether Eliza White glided out of the cabinet frequently in Katie's costume, and whether the correspondence of Nelson Holmes has been tampered with. I assume here, as I did in Vermont, that the mediums can cheat, that they will cheat if necessary, and that they are disposed to cheat if the investigator should relax his vigilance for a moment. And so presupposing, it would be the sheerest waste of time for me to search back through the whole American and English career of the Holmeses, to discover how often, if ever, they played upon the public credulity. But what I went to Philadelphia to discover, and what I mean to discuss, is whether Eliza White's charge that the mediumship of Mr. and Mrs. Holmes was a sham, and their materializations are wretched, fraud upon the credulity of Mr. Rowan and hundreds of other honorable and earnest persons. Our case is now nearly disembarrassed of irrelevant features, drive child's certificate to the identity of Eliza White and Katie King having been shown to be worthless, by reason of his previous self-committal to the contrary fact, and Eliza's own affidavit narrative being inadmissible in evidence, by reason of her impeachment by good insufficient witnesses. Both she and her endorser being turned out of court, the whole question of the existence of Katie and John King is reopened, and we must fall back upon the facts I have been enabled to collect, under my own test conditions, to ascertain whether Mr. Rowan and General Lippitt ever saw a real spirit form in the Holmes Circle Room. If any further proof of the utter worthlessness of Eliza's statements concerning the part she pretended to have played in the Philadelphia comedy were required, it is more than supplied in the following document: 50 North 9th Street, Philadelphia, PA, 8 August 1874. Mr. and Mrs. Holmes, dear friends, I will try and get your things shipped by next week. I could not see the furniture man today but will tomorrow. Dr. Childs comes in here with Dr. Paxson, Mrs. Buckwalter, Mr. Leslie, Mrs. Childs, and they hold seances and go on just as though they owned the house. I don't think Childs is a friend of yours. He don't act like it. All the time prying into everything, and all he cares for you is to make money off of your mediumship. The man that called the other day has called again yesterday. His name is Leslie. Leslie, said Mrs. White, are you a medium? I told him I was. He said I saw your advertisement in the Daily Item last June, but I could today to ask you if you know anything about the whole missus, as everybody says that it is you that is playing Katie King. Now you are a poor woman and I can't see why you do it. You look a good deal like Katie King, and if you know anything and will tell me all about it, several gentlemen and myself will pay you $1,000, and stand by you and guarantee to protect you, and we will pay you the money in advance. We want to stop all this spiritual business that is going all over the country, and we will put the whole missus down if you will only tell me and my friends all you know about it. I told him I did not know anything about your affairs, that if you were not genuine mediums there was none. I did not see how it could be a humbug, as the people had tested the matter in such a way and had published all over. He said, yes, I know all that, but we think you are the one that plays K. And if you will tell us, we will pay you and stand by you. I told him I could not tell anything, as I didn't know anything. Soon after, a man called to see me about the same thing. He does business 1210 Market Street. I think his name is Roberts. He came one night to see your seance with a party of young men to tear the cabinet down and catch somebody, but they had their trouble for their pains. He is the same one that tried to frighten you by sending a lawyer to get his money back. He talked a long time but acted very strange. I told him same as I did Leslie. Now what does all this mean? I wish you would come back to this city. I think it would be best for you, as I don't hear anything talked of but K. And the whole missus. How funny that everybody should think that I am the spirit. How absurd. But all this causes me great trouble and I don't like it. I think I will try and keep the house a month. Mrs. Hannes, who lives at 260 to Madison Street, will go in with me. I will try my hand with her a month. Evans is at me all the time to know if I will take the house. That $50 you gave me to live on and to take care of your things and ship them is all gone, but I guess something will turn up to help me out. Your friend F. Auntie. Your friend Frank Stevens. Eliza White, State of Pennsylvania, City of Philadelphia, S.S. Nelson Holmes and Jenny Holmes being duly sworn, severally depose and say that the above is a true copy of a letter received by them at Blissfield, Michigan, in the month of August last, from Mrs. Eliza White, alias Frank Stevens, that they have each of them seen the said White, alias Stevens, write, and that the original document of which the above is a copy, is in her handwriting, and the handwriting is identical with other letters received from the same person. And deponents further say that after they returned from the West to Philadelphia, the said White, alias Stevens, came to see them to complain that Dr. Henry T. Child had not paid her for the rent of the house. No, 50 North 9th Street, which deponents occupied before going west, but which the said White, alias Stevens, took for 1 month upon her own responsibility, but with some expectation that the said child would see the rent paid if deponents would return to the said house, and the said White, failing to induce deponents to agree to refund the said rent, which indeed they were unable to do, significantly remarked that a number of gentlemen of wealth, including members of the Young Men's Christian Association, were ready to pay her a large sum of money, and she need not trouble them any more. In testimony whereof the said deponents have hereunto signed their names this 25th day of January A.D. 1375. Nelson Holmes. Jenny Holmes. Sworn and subscribed, this 25th day of January A.D. 1375. Francis Hood, Alderman. Here, we have our frail Eliza asserting, in a very emphatic fashion, in confidential correspondence with her ex-lodgers, 1, that she has been tempted by Mr. Leslie in the sum of $1,000, and also by a Mr. Roberts to confess that she played Katie King, 2, that she denied to both of them unreservedly that she had ever done so, and asseverated the genuine mediumship of the Holmeses, but nevertheless Mr. Leslie persisted in his suggestions and offers, 3, that she does not understand what this all means, and hopes the Holmeses will return to Philadelphia, and thus relieve her of all this importunity. When we compare this letter of the 18th of August with her letter from North Cambridge, Mass., to Dr. Child, repudiating all knowledge of fraud in the Katie King affair, which she now avers was written by Holmes' dictation, we have very strong prima facie evidence that her whole story of having personated the spirit is false. The Mr. Leslie she alludes to is no doubt the person of that name who finally engineered the expose of December 5, for he was a constant attendant at the seances, and no other Mr. Leslie has been mentioned in connection with this affair. Mr. Roberts is a nephew of Mr. J. M. Roberts, a wealthy gentleman of Burlington, N. J., and a staunch friend of the Holmeses from first to last. He informed me that his nephew had acknowledged to him that an officer of the Young Men's Christian Association of Philadelphia called upon him several times last summer, and tried to enlist his services to help break down spiritualism, in general and the Holmeses in particular, but that he had declined. Moreover, he has recently reaffirmed, in a letter to General Lippitt, his denial, and protested against his being included among the conspirators. I know no more of the facts of the case than appears in the documentary evidence, and leave it to the parties interested to fight it out among themselves. It certainly will strike the public as strange that Eliza White should so circumstantially describe the visit and importunity of Mr. Roberts, if no such things had ever occurred, and the only possible explanation of the mystery must be sought either in the personation of Mr. Roberts by some other individual, or a deliberate falsehood on the part of Eliza, a falsehood without apparent motive. In the interest of good morals, it is to be hoped that Eliza's hints of the connection of her tempters with the Young Men's Christian Association have no warrant in fact, for it would be regarded as an infamous outrage in this day and country, for any religious body to resort to bribery and the subornation of perjury, for the purpose of crushing out any other religious faith. There is still other evidence going to show that Eliza was not always, if ever, Katie King, for, on the very evening when she was exploding the whole humbug, by giving a mock seance to Mr. Leslie, Mr. Rowan, Dr. Child and another, the things happened that are related in the following affidavits, which, but for burdening my report with redundant testimony, I might have her corroborated by numerous other affidavits to the same effect. State of Pennsylvania, City of Philadelphia. S.S. W. H. Westcote, being duly sworn, says that he resides in the City of Philadelphia, State of Pennsylvania, that on the night of the 5th of December, 1874, he in company with some 15 or 20 persons was present at the residence of Mr. and Mrs. Holmes, 825 North 10th Street, where a seance was being held, that between the hours of 8 and 10 o'clock on said night, while Mr. Holmes was in the cabinet, he saw issue from the cabinet the spirit form of what is known to be Katie King, that she first came to the aperture, showed her face several times, spoke to the audience, was recognized by many of those present, who had seen her on several occasions at number 50 North 9th Street, and afterwards, she opened the door and stepped out among the audience. This she repeated three times during the seance. And deponent says that the Katie King who appeared on the said evening was the identical spirit who had shown herself during the preceding 2 months at the same place through the mediumship of the said Mr. and Mrs. Holmes, in testimony whereof the deponent has hereunto signed his name this 25th day of January, 1875, W.M. H. Westcott. Affirmed and subscribed, this 25th day of January, A. D. 1875. Francis Hood, Alderman. State of Pennsylvania, City of Philadelphia. S.S. Adolphus Felger, M.D., being sworn, says that he is a practicing physician in the City of Philadelphia and resides at number 154 North 11th Street, that he has read the foregoing affidavit and knows the facts therein stated to be true, he having been present at the seance described. And deponent further says that he has seen the spirit known as Katie King in all perhaps 80 times, is perfectly familiar with her features, and cannot be mistaken as to the identity of the Katie King who appeared upon the evening of December 5th, for, while the said spirit scarcely ever appeared of exactly the same height or features to evenings in succession, her voice was always the same, and the expression of her eyes and the topics of her conversation enabled him to be still more certain of her being the same person. Ad Felger, M.D. sworn and subscribed before me this 25th day of January, 1875. W.M. P. Hibbard, Alderman, Dr. Adolf Felger, who signs one of these affidavits, is well known and widely respected as a physician in Philadelphia. He is beloved by all who have been so fortunate as to make his acquaintance. Mr. Rowan describes him, in his letter to me of December 28, as a popular and highly esteemed German physician of this city, Philadelphia, and his simple word would outweigh a score of affidavits of your Eliza White's. Again, I have before me sundry letters written by Mr. Holmes to Eliza White and Dr. Child from Michigan, which speak of Katie King's having appeared in their circles out there. On the 25th of August he writes to Dr. Child that they held a seance on the 21st, at which Katie came and showed herself splendid, while on the 28th he writes to Mrs. White instructions about packing and shipping his furniture from Philadelphia. Clearly Mrs. White could not be in the latter city occupying the house, and in Michigan playing the part of Katie King at one and the same time. On September 4th, he writes to Child, that K. comes to us better than ever, but seems troubled about something that we can't find out. What does she tell you? And Eliza does not pretend, in her affidavit, to have gone west before the 12th of September. Who, then, was personating Katie before her arrival? The occurrence of the phenomena in Blissfield, while Eliza was still in Philadelphia is, furthermore, attested by Dr. Child himself in a letter of July to the Religio-Philosophical Journal, of Chicago, and in this same letter he speaks of knowing the woman, and being able to declare that she was not Katie King. It does seem as if there never was so tangled a skein as this to unravel. In fact, when I review the whole of the evidence in this case, the assertions and counter-assertions of Eliza, the contradictions of all her material statements by the Holmeses, and their plausible explanations of the suspicious sentences in Mr. Holmes' letters to her, the circumstantially minute descriptions given by Mr. Rowan of things seen by him, which no theory of personation by Eliza, or any other mortal explains, the added testimony of General Lippitt, the recent confession of Mr. and Mrs. Holmes to General Lippitt, that Dr. Child procured Mrs. White to stand for the photograph of Katie sold by him, the fact that this picture bears no resemblance to a portrait of Eliza in my possession, which was taken after the Katie photograph, the rash certificate of Dr. Child as to the identity of Eliza and Katie, after the fatal statements in his pamphlet, and his astonishing self-contradictions in his newspaper contributions, when I consider all these, I confess that I am completely unable to decide whether there ever was such a thing as a false personation of the spirit at all. Like the Comte de Gabalis, I am tempted to say, in short, I could make neither head nor tail on't. Nothing but a full confession by the Holmeses to the fact, backed by corroborative proof, will throw light upon the foggy subject. Their unsupported assertion would not alone suffice to convict them, for we have all seen enough of mediums and mediumship to know that lying spirits may just as well now, as in Bible times, see I Kings 22, 19-23, control mediums, perhaps even to the denying of crimes they have committed, and the confessing to others of which they are wholly innocent. Look at this very matter of the photograph. General Lippitt tells us in the Banner of Light, of February 6 instant, that the Holmeses confessed to him, on the 31st of January, that Eliza stood for the Katy pictures. Well, let the reader judge for himself whether this is so or not. Here we have a copy of that photograph, and, beside it, one given to me as a portrait of Eliza, and alleged to have been taken since the other was published by Dr. Child. Do they look alike? Is there any resemblance between the two faces in the breadth of jawbone, prominence of cheekbone, shape and length of nose, curve of nostril, length of lower jaw, or shape of head, in a word, in either of those salient features of a head and face which emaciation does not alter? If I had been permitted to see the shrinking affiant, I might better judge of the fidelity of the two portraits, or either, to the original. As it is, I can only say that the one which the public will now see for the first time, was given to me by one who has the best of reasons for knowing whether it is good or not, and who assures me that it is the woman herself. It was also identified by the chief of police, Mr. Sage, and by other citizens of Winstead. The best we can do, under the circumstances, is to put the whole batch of contradictory testimony about this entire case in a pigeonhole, and escape out of this quagmire of doubt upon the solid ground of fact, as demonstrated by the experiments and investigations to which I will now ask the reader's attention. I reached Philadelphia, as before observed, on the 4th of January, and called upon Mr. Leslie, Dr. Child, Mr. Rowan, Dr. Felger and others. I took rooms at the private hotel of Mrs. Martin, in Gerrard Street, where our friend Madame de Blavatsky was also quartered. My acquaintance with me, to be, begun under such interesting circumstances at Chittenden, has continued, and recently become more intimate in consequence of her having accepted the offer of M. Axico, the eminent St. Petersburg publisher, former tutor to the Tsarowitch, to translate my Chittenden letters into the Russian language for republication in the capital of the Tsar. I gradually discovered that this lady, whose brilliant accomplishments and eminent virtues of character, no less than her exalted social position, entitle her to the highest respect, is one of the most remarkable mediums in the world. At the same time, her mediumship is totally different from that of any other person I ever met, for, instead of being controlled by spirits to do their will, it is she who seems to control them to do her bidding. Whatever may be the secret by which this power has been attained, I cannot say, but that she possesses it, I have had too many proofs to permit me to doubt the fact. Many years of her life have been passed in Oriental lands, where what we recognize as spiritualism, has for years been regarded as the mere rudimental developments of a system which seems to have established such relations between mortals and the immortals as to enable certain of the former to have dominion over many of the latter. I pass by such of the mysteries of the Egyptian, Hindu and other priestly orders, as may be ascribed to a knowledge of the natural sciences, and refer to those higher branches of that so-called white magic, which has been practiced for countless centuries by the initiated. Whether me, Dobby, has been admitted behind the veil or not can only be surmised, for she is very reticent upon the subject, but her startling gifts seem impossible of explanation upon any other hypothesis. She wears upon her bosom the mystic jeweled emblem of an Eastern brotherhood, and is probably the only representative in this country of this fraternity, who, as Bulwer remarks, in an earlier age boasted of secrets of which the philosopher's stone was but the least, who considered themselves the heirs of all that the Chaldeans, the Magi, the Gymnosophists, and the Platonists had taught, and who differed from all the darker sons of magic in the virtue of their lives, the purity of their doctrines and their insisting, as the foundation of all wisdom, on the subjugation of the senses, and the intensity of religious faith. After knowing this remarkable lady, and seeing the wonders that occur in her presence so constantly that they actually excited at length but a passing emotion of surprise, I am almost tempted to believe that the stories of Eastern fables are but simple narratives of fact, and that this very American outbreak of spiritualistic phenomena is under the control of an order, which while depending for its results upon unseen agents, has its existence upon earth among men. The occurrence of the phenomena I am about to describe is calculated to arouse the deepest interest in the mind of every student in psychology.